Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the podcast. This is episode 35. Even though we've had a six-month break in doing podcasts, which I will explain in the post-show, this is one episode I wanted to do before we took the break. Mark Stoll has been a psychotherapist and coach for over two decades, integrating mindfulness-centered approaches and traditional cognitive therapies into a way of life that helps people free themselves from the prison of their mind so that they can engage life and connect to what matters most. No one has benefited more from these skills than him when the hell of benzo withdrawal hit last year. After multiple attempts to get off Klonopin, he was finally successful in September of 2020, but then got to experience firsthand that it's not about controlling our inner experiences, but how we relate to our thoughts, feelings, and sensations, and what meaning we assign to these internal experiences that truly determine our level of peace and happiness. He has found it important to interpret the suffering he went through as having made him a better, more compassionate person. Mark lives with his wife and two teenage boys in Columbia, South Carolina, and knows that it was his family that kept him going despite whatever symptoms he experienced. And now, 1 year off, considers himself mostly healed and looking forward to the rest of the healing coming when it comes. His website is markstolltherapy.com. That's markstolltherapy.com. Please stay tuned for the post show. Thank you. Hi, Mark, and welcome to the podcast. And first of all, I want to congratulate you because you're just a little bit past your 1 year anniversary. And we were going to do this before, I think, when you were 6 months off. So it's kind of good that we're doing it now because I want you to tell everybody a story. So first of all, I think people are going to be interested that you're a psychotherapist. And how did this happen to you? So what happened that led you to be prescribed a benzodiazepine?
Well, it's almost embarrassing to admit because I am a therapist, but I think it was the year 1995 and I was in graduate school and I had recently moved from New York to South Carolina. I was stressed, anxious, and dealing with school and dealing with life. And I don't really remember how it happened because it was so long ago, but I was in counseling at the University Counseling Center and they encouraged that while we were in the master's program to be therapist, and I thought this was great. And somehow I wound up seeing the psychiatrist there. And somehow he recommended I start Klonopin. And somehow I thought it was a great idea. Looking back, it was 1995.
Okay. That's when you were first prescribed?
That's when I was first prescribed it.
You first prescribed it in 89, but never took it. So that was good.
Right.
So now this is 1995.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. So I had seen a psychiatrist or a family practice person back in 89, and they prescribed it. And I was like, nah, you know, I don't want to do this. But I guess I was 25 in 1995, and I just, for some reason, thought it was a good idea. Thought it would help relax me, help me sleep better. I don't really know. I took it and didn't really help with the stress that I was going through, but I still sort of liked the edge that it took off.
Right. And back then, there's not a lot of information on the internet back then, so you couldn't really have checked either.
No, I just, you know, they said their biggest fear was, well, it's very addictive. Like, it's very addictive. I'm like, well, I'm not worried about that. I'll be fine. So that's the only thing that they said. It was a clean medicine. It's been around for a very long time. It was an addiction thing. And I wasn't worried about that. So mm-hmm. I took it. And here I am.
And so when you first took it, and you said it took the edge off, did you start to develop anything? Because I know when we talked, you said you were always sensitive, you know, like a worrier, because I was like that. I was a very sensitive person when I was younger. Did it cause you to become more sensitive, more of a worry? Do you think you were becoming more anxious?
So I've always been generally just preoccupied and generally a worrier. And I think that's what got me into wanting to be a counselor, to figure this out, to sort this out, to work with my mind. And I can say that the Klonopin took the edge off, but it never really made things a lot better, but it took the edge off, but it was more, it took the edge off, but it didn't make anything worse. Definitely not. No.
Right. So you were then at one point, you go cold turkey and then for like in a week and then you're not knowing, you know. And
no, yeah. So I think this was probably 97, maybe 2 years later. And I had read about this. I had read, you know, it could cause a seizure. Don't go cold turkey. But I wanted off of it. I didn't want to be on it anymore. I don't know why. I didn't want to be on it anymore. So there was like other things in there where the doctor wanted to try Xanax instead of Clonopin and Ativan. So I tried a bunch of different things. And the only thing that didn't work very well was Xanax. Xanax mm-hmm. caused horrible memory loss. And so I had to quickly go off that. But at this point, I wanted to be off of everything. I went off for about a week, maybe 5 days. I don't know. I just stopped cold turkey and it was the most miserable experience. Like the anxiety that I experienced was millions times beyond what I had ever experienced beforehand. And right. the doctor's like, well, of course, that's your anxiety. That's what they always would tell me. That's your anxiety. But no, it wasn't. And I could never explain that to them. And so I jumped right back on.
Yeah. How much are you on when you went cold turkey? I think that's important to know.
I don't remember. I was probably on 2 to 3 milligrams a day. It was quite stupid looking back what I did. I don't remember. Most of those years, up until I went off last year, I was on 4 milligrams. Okay. But at that point in time in 97, I may have been on 2 or 3. I don't know.
But you know, you can't blame yourself because again, there's no information. We don't really have a lot up on all the internets, you know, around the world as people are putting stuff out there. And the doctors didn't have any information either. So you were doing right. what you thought was right. So now comes another time you want to attempt to come off.
Right. And so now it's 2005.
Is your health getting worse? Is your health getting worse as you're getting up to 2004, 2005? Is there something going on that makes you again want to come off?
No, I've just never been a big fan of medicine. I've always been into natural medicine. I just wanted to be off medicine. I didn't need it. I thought I didn't need it. And so I decided again in 2005, but this time I thought I was really smart. This time I tapered for like about a month or 6 weeks or something like that off of 4 milligrams. And again, made it about a week, but the derealization, the depersonalization, just the incredible just sensory experiences were beyond anything I could have ever imagined. And I jumped back on because I just didn't want to deal with that. But again, right. the doctor told me that this is your anxiety, but it wasn't the anxiety I experienced in 95 before I started taking the medicine. It was some hell anxiety that I've never experienced before.
Right. But oh, yeah. it didn't. You can't even explain how bad it is. It's so horrible.
Right. Right. But it never in any way affected me that I wanted to go off of it. I guess it's sad to say I never had any bad experiences with it, really, except for, you know, being in my 20s. It's, again, embarrassing to admit, but, you know, drinking and things like that and going to bars and being a graduate student, that wasn't the brightest thing I ever could have done. But, you know, I made it through, fortunately.
Right. Yep. But now we get into when you decide, now you've got information and you decide you want to taper off. So what happens then? So we're in 2017, right? When you decide
right.
you're going to, and this time, you know, you decide to taper again, probably not too fast this time. And you've got the Ashton manual.
Right. So I think I took about 4 months this time. I thought this was definitely going to be this was it. This was, I'm going to do it. And I about 4 or 5 months, I don't remember again. I finally made the jump and, what happened first was, and I'm only looking back, do I make this connection? What happened first was when I got really low in the dose, I started developing this cough and a real difficult time sort of talking without coughing. And I don't know, doctor said it was acid reflux. I got on some medicine, it cleared it right up, but I jumped off in the, like maybe November, 2017, and I made it 30 days. This time I tried real hard. I made it 30 days and again, the same thing, but even worse this time, because this 30 days I had a chance to like really start to experience the insomnia. And besides that, I had this incredible, like electrical zaps, I called them, like just these strange feelings, like throughout my legs and my body, where I would get this strong, like pain that felt like an electrical current that would come and then go. I had like this incredible aching in my legs. I don't know if it's restless leg, whatever it is. A doctor told me it was, but I couldn't sleep. I had these painful electrical zaps just going through my body. I had these horrible itching legs at night where I could not stop itching. I would be awake for hours just itching. It was horrible. And beyond that, I had this, for the first time in my life, this deep, deep sadness. This sadness I couldn't explain. Like, it was horrible. I started crying for just what seemed like no reason. And I was still working. I was still doing everything. And after 30 days, I was, no, screw this. I had to get back on. I couldn't live that way.
Right. And you go to work, you know, you're trying to work.
Right.
So
I had to, yeah, I had to work. I had to, and so I should also mention the one symptom that's been around since actually 2013, when I went from 4 to 3 milligrams, was the tinnitus. The tinnitus is at this point in 2017, just so loud, it's ridiculous.
Oh, I hated that. Yeah.
The reflux was, you know, it was kept under control by medicine. And then I decided, you know, 6 months later, I'm like, well, let me get off the medicine. So I got off the medicine, and I was able to keep it under control with diet. But I've never really, since 2017, I've been unable to really eat many carbs. The minute I do, I get like a tight chest. I can't breathe. It's the strangest thing.
Yeah. Now, here's a question, Mark. When you did this back in 2017, did you drink occasionally? Because some people think, well, I can have an occasional drink. Did you?
I'm not sure. I think I did. I think I maybe had a beer on occasion. I think I know I did this. I took Valerian a bunch of times.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I did that.
Dr. Pert was against drinking even up to a couple of years after you're off, because it will hit the same receptor. So I just wanted to check, because you know, that would hinder. Plus, you came off too fast.
Right. I came off too fast. And plus, in the Asher manual, like I got confused, because she said, you know, it's okay to drink on occasion, have one or two, like don't try to be too clean, or I don't know how she words it. So I had thought it was okay.
Yeah.
I had thought it was okay, but I did at least never have more than like one or two, but I guess that was, I don't do that anymore.
Yeah. No, and it, you know, it's funny, there was an organization down in Australia, they did not like that she put that in there, even when I saw it, but she felt that some people could do it, and I guess she didn't want to take that away from everybody, but
yeah,
my personal opinion is don't touch it. You know, when you're going through this, don't touch it. So now you go a month after, in 2017, you've got all these symptoms. Now what happens?
So I decided to go back on.
You go back on again? Yeah. Okay. So you go back on.
Yeah. After 30 days, I made it 30 days and I just couldn't take it anymore. I think I had a presentation to do for work or something like that. So I took like a quarter of a milligram or something of Clonopin, and I thought, well, maybe I can just take it as needed, foolishly. And I think I took it a couple times as needed, and before you know it, I was just taking it again. Yeah. But I only went back up to 1 milligram. I never went back up beyond that. Never went to 3, or God no, never 4 again. But the doctor prescribed me, I forget what it was, some sort of Ambien or something like that when I got off of it. I took that a couple nights. Of course, looking back, I now know I wasn't supposed to, but it didn't really even help.
Right. So all this time, all these years, it never really helped you, but you're on them and you can't, you know, having a hard time getting off. So now when you go to do it this next time, you know more, you know, you're ready.
Yes.
What did you do anything in preparation? Did you, you know, what did you do?
I thought that I was doing everything right, but I guess, unfortunately, I have this sort of like false view of myself that I was just so healthy that I could speed up the process a little bit. So I took, this time I took 8.5 months to taper off of the milligram, and I thought that was great. And I prepared myself in terms of being healthy. I was running. I was like exercising so much. I had the cleanest diet. I was doing like this ridiculously clean keto diet, and I ate everything, no processed food. I thought I was doing everything right. I got off of it after 8.5 months. And yeah, honestly, it wasn't that bad at first. Mm-hmm. Those first couple weeks, what I dealt with was a lot of like anxiety over like indecisiveness, and some high blood pressure that I noticed. And I was able to, you know, with various breathing exercises and just calm myself down. And I took control of the blood pressure and seemed like it was great. A month out, I was feeling really good. Yeah, some heightened anxiety, but really, really good. And I don't know if everything that happened after that was connected to how I unraveled, but it seems like it was. So it's going to sound silly, but I had some blood work done, and my cholesterol was through the roof on keto. I mean, just through the roof. And I decided to start eating carbs again. And before you know it, I was starting to feel bad again. My chest was tight. I was having a difficult time breathing. And stupidly, I've always had like mild exercise-induced asthma. So stupidly, I went on an inhaler called Breo. And it's a steroid inhaler. I took it 3 nights and it tore me up. I had insomnia for 3 nights. My arms were numb. My head was numb. I had no idea what the world I was going through. And so I went off that. And since then, it's you know, I've gotten a lot better. Obviously, it's a year later. But that next few months after that was a living nightmare. I didn't sleep but about an hour a night for the next 30 days. Oh. It was torturous. I don't know what happened again, if it was all connected or if it would have happened anyway, but it seemed like that inhaler triggered something. Of course, yeah. When I presented that idea to the doctors, they thought that was the silliest thing in the world, but it really seemed connected.
Yeah, certain medications have hindered people for a while. So yeah, my guess would be the timing couldn't have been, you know, any worse, but yeah.
Right, right. I was feeling so good up until then. And then, you know, it's a steroid inhaler. So that makes sense. They say that don't touch steroids, but however it unfolded. And then my acid reflux got really bad. I don't even know if it's acid reflux. It's just reflux, this tight feeling in my chest, this burning and difficulty breathing and the feeling like my throat is closing. And so the doctor prescribed more medicine. I decided not to go on it this time. I decided to really clean up my diet, but I took the wrong route. And I took like a very high carb, very high vegetable kind of like route, and it didn't work. It made everything worse. And it took me a while to realize that diet that was working when I first got off the Klonopin was a diet that obviously I need to stick to for a while. So right. I had to slowly get back on a real low carb diet.
Okay. Now I had a question because you and I had talked about this before. One of the things that you did when you taped it was that, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, the Buteyko breathing.
Oh, yes. That's, yeah, so, the Buteyko breathing.
Explain that. Yeah. What is that and how did that help you? Because, you know, a lot of us do have they call it air hunger. I didn't know what to call it years ago when I had it, when you can't breathe. Like you're breathing, but you're not getting a deep breath, all the throat closing. So yeah. Explain this and how did it help?
So Buteyko breathing was, I can't think of his name, but his last name, Buteyko, Konstantin Buteyko is a Russian physiologist who came up with this method for breathing. And basically the breathing is, breathing in and out through your nose always. When you're exercising, when you're sleeping, when you're, and so the idea is that it raises nitric oxide, it raises, I think, CO2 levels in your bloodstream, and it relaxes your lungs. It relaxes your, it lowers your blood pressure, and it really does. It's a great help for asthma. It's a great help for blood pressure, the two reasons I used it, and it helps a lot. So I really started doing that, sleeping with my mouth closed. I tried taping my mouth a few times. I wasn't a big fan of that, but I started just getting much better at being a nasal breather, and it helped a lot. But
can you spell that
with its limits?
Wanted to look it up.
Sure, I believe it is BUTEYKO.
Okay, so they can look it up, and I'm sure you can go to YouTube and learn it. But it sounds like it's pretty simple to learn. Are there any other therapies that you use that might help somebody?
I practice a lot of meditation, a lot of mindfulness, a lot of deep relaxation. Exercise has been everything for me. I still haven't really been able to run very much because when I do, my throat starts to close and my chest gets tight. So I use my rower, I do other things. But cardio has been really important to me. When I couldn't sleep in last year, I started using a real bright light therapy. I don't know if it helped or not, but I started getting sleep after about 30 days.
Okay.
So those have been the most important things.
Okay.
Yeah. Patrick McKeown, he has a bunch of books out on Buteyko breathing and other sort of natural breathing techniques. He's been very helpful. At this point, after a year of dealing with this, I recently had my gut tested and I started seeing a functional medicine doctor and started like really focusing on healing my gut, because a year later, I thought that my year anniversary off Klonopin was going to be like this amazing, great feat. And I feel like I'm about 80% healed, and it's very frustrating. I have a difficult time believing that this is still actually happening. I mean, the specialist that I've seen in the last year for my inability to breathe and my throat closing and my tight chest and like has been unbelievable. The physicians that I've seen and the tests I've have done, and they just are like, yeah, there's nothing wrong with you. Like, and I'm great. I'm so grateful for that. It's amazing. It just, it's horrible. These symptoms are overwhelming.
Yeah, they are. But for me, just like you, at 5 years off, I mean, I waited 5 years because I went to a functional medicine doctor, and as we healed the gut within 3 months, I couldn't even believe how much stronger I was getting. So
that's great.
These drugs are amongst the drugs that harm the gut. So Natasha Campbell McBride, I think she wrote the book, it's the GAPS diet, the gut and psychological syndrome. That's a tough diet. So there's just not one way to get better as you're healing the gut. There's many ways, but you know, she mentions the drugs that harm the gut. So yes, I think that if we kind of start working on our guts first, for anybody new that wants to taper, I think I always said that was important.
That's probably the best advice you could give right there. I mean, yeah. I thought, and I really had a good gut in order, but I sabotaged it by worrying about my cholesterol, which was completely unimportant at the time.
Right.
And I just, tough. So, it's been really tough.
You know what it is, because you've done everything, and then it gets to be a year and you're thinking, why aren't I better? And people just look for each other. But it is something each one of us has to do to get better. And I think now that you're working with a functional medicine doctor, I think you're going to see it does take a few months. And you know, every now and then I will still take the stuff because I'm thinking, oh, even stress harms our gut. So I do try to watch my gut. If you could talk to some medical professionals, I want to go for that first. What would you say to them when they're dealing with a benzo person, or even therapists that are listening, how to deal with benzo people?
I would say if the person wants to get off, help them get off and let them go at their own pace. In 2013, the reason I went from 4 to 3 was because a new doctor I had after my other doctor moved wanted me off in like a month, and it scared the hell out of me. And so I found a different doctor that kept me on them, which, again, I don't know if it's good or bad, but let them go at their own pace, because it's terrifying to think like you know better and you need to be off this in a month. And the looks that they give you when you say, I'm still dealing with symptoms months later, they're like, no, that's been out of your system forever. This isn't Klonopin yet, but it is. Believe them when they tell you that this is real. The looks that I've got, the raised eyebrows, the smirks, like it's really unpleasant to experience that. And it's really frustrating. Yes. I'd say help them get off as slow as possible. And if they don't want to get off, I mean, looking back, if I would have known the year of hell that I'd have, I may not have done it. I don't know.
You mean you may not have come off, or would you gone even?
Yeah, slower? I may not have. No, that is what I definitely would have done. That last sliver I was taking, I would have done. It's taken that for the longest amount of time. I just thought I was so healthy that I could handle this, and so yeah, they could help people. And I meet a lot of people that are still on them, and I tell them, really, this can be so difficult to get off of. So there's no reason. It never really helped my anxiety that much. It's something, right. Helping my anxiety was something I had to learn to do. I had to learn to relax. I had to learn to meditate. I had to learn to prepare for presentations. I don't know. It's not necessary. If a loved one dies, or if there's a tragedy, yeah, that makes sense. Go on for a few weeks or however long, 2 to 4 weeks, I think you recommend, or that is recommended. But beyond that, God, no. It's the most horrible experience of my life. I don't understand why it's not getting more attention in the media.
I know. So one of the things I want to ask you, Mark, because it took you a few times to do this. So for anybody who had already tried to get off and they couldn't do it, you didn't give up. You kept going. And, you know, even though you were healthy, I think we're learning now from the very beginning, your gut was a mess. I think with me, yes. I know from the very beginning, if somebody had just helped me heal my gut first, I don't think I ever would have had a problem, honestly. Because I see
that's amazing,
now
yeah.
Somebody who does everything first to heal their guts, and again, I'm another one that believes we all don't have good liver function. I don't believe in cleansing the liver, but in there are things to help you assist very, very slowly to help it work better. We've seen it where people try it over and over, then they go and do the functional medicine first, and then try to do a taper, and it's a heck of a lot easier. If one person even said, "Oh, I might have had 3 uncomfortable days," like that's that's proof that healing your gut and doing all that first makes a huge difference.
Wow, so, that's amazing! That would have been incredible.
You're good to give people that hope. Like, you don't give up. You know, keep going. And now there's so much more information from when you first tried to get off.
Right, and And don't think that you're unique in any way, because that's what I thought. I thought I was so healthy that I could speed this process up. And if I would have tapered longer and had I known about functional medicine and healing the gut, that would have been the route I would have taken. That's amazing to hear. Like, some people just have a few days of symptoms if they heal their gut first. That's incredible.
Yeah. After suffering, like, I know somebody tried 4 attempts, and after suffering multiple times and going back on, thought, okay, you know what? I'm going to do something differently, and went and did the functional medicine. Took a year to get healthy, taking the products for his body, and somebody else, same thing, multiple attempts, then, okay, let's do something different. And yet the other one, the lower she got, the better she got.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And another thing I'd say is, like, anxiety, healing from anxiety, this is incredible, like, anxiety that the benzos are causing, the rebound and the pain in the body, it's going to be like a lifestyle. Like, you have to really live in a peaceful way. You've got to find the time for relaxation. You've got to find the time to go walking and to get your exercise in. You've got to get the sleep. And even if you can't get good sleep, get, lie there and find some peace in the resting. It's just so important to make this peaceful lifestyle. You need to maybe watch comedies, switch from drama to comedies in the movies that you're watching. You need to stay uplifted, get some good reading in, spend time with people that you love and that love you. It's a miserable time, but you can take the sort of habits to make it okay. And I think acceptance, the biggest thing I would say is acceptance. Sometimes your feelings are way off. You're feeling down. You're feeling anxious. Sometimes your body's in pain. Sometimes you can't breathe, and just be okay with it. You say all the time that for most people, this is temporary. Most people heal. That helped me a lot, knowing that most people heal, that it was okay. What you're feeling now, it may suck and it may just not be at all pleasant, but it's okay. There's no trying to not make it okay, trying to force it away, trying to hate it and hate the doctors and hate this and hate that and hate yourself for doing, like, it does. None of that stuff is helpful. It's okay the way it is. Right. Accept
That's
it.
Great advice. Great advice, Mark. I can't thank you enough. And I'm so glad in one way that we got delayed 6 months in this because, you know, different things happened in your journey over the last 6 months. And I really appreciate it. Mark, because you have, your own practice, and I would hate to see you get inundated with a million calls, but do you want to even mention your website, or we can just keep that private for now?
No, that'd be great. No, it's okay, at markstoltherapy.com. I'm a therapist here in Columbia, South Carolina. I also see people online. It's embarrassing to me. I help people with severe anxiety and also depression and relationship struggles, but the severe anxiety is my specialty. And having been on this medicine, it's embarrassing to admit I was on the medicine, but not anymore. Because it's another thing to look at the way I along with acceptance, this suffering has made me a better person.
Absolutely.
I'm a much better person for having gone through this and can help people a lot more than I could have a year ago.
Right. But, you know, when you say you're embarrassed, because I think when we all find out what happened to us, we're embarrassed. But when you look in these support groups, there isn't a profession of somebody who isn't in these groups. Everyone was blindsided. Nobody knew. We have, you know, doctors of every profession, you know, chiropractors, nurses, nurse assistants, you know, we have lawyers, I mean, engineers, you know, just housewives. Everyone was blindsided. Right. So, yes, we're embarrassed because it's like, how did it happen to me? Well, how many of us are online now? There's just, I mean,
right.
way too many. So it is good to go public, I think.
I'm
get your story out there.
I'm pleased to, if it can help somebody else. I felt like I should have known better, but I maybe I did, maybe I didn't, but here I am right now. And if I can help somebody get off this, and make their, you know, life a little bit easier, that'd be great. And even if my story can help, that'd be great.
I know. Well, I'm sure many people will be listening to it. So, Mark, I want to thank you for coming on. I'm sorry for the delay it took us to get it done, but I think it was great. And I really
thank
appreciate
you for
it.
Having
thank
me.
Thank you.
Thank you, Geraldine.
Bye. Okay. Bye. All right, Garrett, we just finished our first episode after having a 6 month break. Which, before we get into that, we'll just kind of quickly explain where we've been for 6 months.
Sure.
All right. So in April, we did our last one in March. And then in April, I had to leave to go to Florida for 3 weeks to take care of my mother. And when we got back, Dad had to have some, had to go in to have a cardiac catheterization. And we found out he was 100%, his LAD was blocked. So he had two more stents put in. And also in the meantime, before we left for Florida, he had a blood test done. And we knew his PSA had shot through the roof. So we get home, you know, now he's had the two stents. You're not supposed to have any blood work done. Long story short, he did have to go into the hospital and have the biopsy done. And he does have prostate cancer. So we're on cancer number 3.
Yes.
So we took the summer, even though we were going to do some, you know what, took the summer to enjoy ourselves. And
although we should say for a sec, like, just to stop, because I feel like we've had to explain what's going on with Joe a few times.
Yeah.
And it's like, he's doing fine. Like, if you met
he's
him,
doing
you,
good,
you
yeah.
wouldn't think anything's going on.
He's happy.
Him.
He's got nerves,
I mean,
of steel.
Yeah. That includes, like, when he's actually in the hospital. He doesn't even seem to know why he's in there. He's like, well, I don't know why they're doing this to me, but I'll be out of here in a couple
we
days.
We do everything with laughter. Yeah. So, you know, and I was supposed to go right back to Florida and, you know, take care of my mother. So I will be leaving again for a couple of months. I think that's, we've decided we're going to hold off. He would like surgery. We think at this point he can't have it again because I have the stents put in. So we're going to try to with diet again and just get that PSA lowered and wait and talk to his cardiologist. So that's what's been going on. And we're even going to try while I'm away to do these, but we'll see.
Right. Long story short, it makes it very hard to be consistent with these when we have so many, like, between my work schedule or, like, you know, life schedule, and then all the stuff that's going on with you and Joe and going to Florida, it just makes it so hard to consistently do that. And it's like,
yeah,
we are officially the streakiest podcast, you know,
out there
in history. We will end up doing 6 in a row, like, in 2 weeks, and then obviously we disappear for 6 months.
Yeah. But you know what? I think we, part of all this, and we're going to get into the interview we just did with Mark, is you just got to kind of go with the flow. Now, some people would think, how do I do it all without a tranquilizer? Because I can't change what's happening. And I'm not going to worry about, I've learned, just as Mark was saying, you know, I've learned how to handle my stress as best that I can. I'm not saying there are times that it overwhelms me when other things are coming in at me. So anyway, that's what we do. I'm not going to stress over it until I have to. And it's important that we take care of our family first over the podcast, even though we want to have, we have great podcasts coming. But family first and taking care of them.
Yeah, and I think Mark, you know, he mentions it in the interview. It's important that you find alternatives to help you relax, you know, whether it's mindfulness or it's working out or it's whatever it is to get your breathing techniques, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that stuff's important.
Yeah, I agree. Do you even do it when you're stressed with work?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
See? And you know, one of the things Mark said that, you know, he was embarrassed, and there are so many. I think we all get embarrassed, and then I said that in it, because how did it happen to any one of us? We did not know. Even if you read that now with all the stuff on the internet, even if you read what can happen, think, well, I take it as my doctor told me, so it's not going to happen to me. Or somebody can take it for a very short time and they're going to have the same withdrawal as somebody who took it for years. Genetically, we're all different. And the fact that he kept going, he knew he wanted off of it. It just shows, just keep going. And I know people in the groups are afraid of kindling. Oh, I tried once, I tried twice, I tried there. It doesn't matter, because we have seen with others as they get healthier, it doesn't matter how many times you try to come off. Your last time might be your best time. But he is off, and now he's going to clean up what the drugs have done to him. So,
yeah, the embarrassed part of it was interesting to me, because I feel like because of my job and having filed the benzo bill and gotten everybody's testimony, I've been reading testimony for 3.5 sessions now. So, you know, literally hundreds of people from around the world, their testimony on their experience with benzodiazepines, however, whatever it may be. And I think probably if you had to do like one of those word charts, like the word that appears the most is embarrassed.
Really?
Yeah. Because, you know, you have all these very capable people that are doing what their doctor told them to do, and you know, their life takes this dramatic turn because of it, and they're embarrassed. So I feel like what you always can see in these written testimonies, within the first paragraph, the word embarrassed is going to appear, mm-hmm. because people are embarrassed. And I feel like maybe there's a stigma attached to being dependent on a drug or having a drug cause like a downturn in your life.
Right. Right. And then when you talked about the sadness, that deep sadness, I mean, I can remember I was never a person that had depression, never experienced it in my life. And when I came off, and again, I came off so fast, it was as if hell just opened up and swallowed me. I have no other word for it. I couldn't pull myself out and pretend. And you kids were young, and it just keep me in a room, shut the door, don't talk to me.
It's just like a deep depression.
You know, again, I was always a happy, outgoing, energetic person, and it just strips you of that. And, you know, the other thing
had that... you ever been depressed before in your life?
Never.
So this was the first time you've ever
experienced it. It's drug-induced. Drug-induced, right. But, yeah, I mean, it's a horrible thing. But the other thing that Mark experienced, that so many people experience, and I hope any professionals listening to this, every time he went to a doctor, what he's saying he feels is, well, it's your original anxiety, or, you know, well, that can't be, it's out of your system. Do you know how many are told that? I mean, it would take them 5 minutes to go online and look and see that what they're going through. Or if your patient is telling you they feel something, have a little sympathy and listen. Don't just shove another drug at them. This is what goes on. And yes, is it hard to go through it when you're suffering like that? And who wants to go home without something to fix it? But sometimes there isn't a pill to fix it. You got to go through it to get to the other side. And he's doing great with his diet, you know, and that's important. So, I mean, you know, hopefully things are going to start changing. And I think they're slowly, we see an impact happening out there, especially here in the U.S., slowly. So anything else you'd like to add?
Do you want to talk about the podcast that you recently did with Dr. Halligan, for anybody who hasn't seen that?
Right. So anybody who hasn't seen it, I was on Dr. Patricia Halligan's podcast. Her podcast is called A Hero's Journey. I think it's called Recovery, A Hero's Journey. And you can just Google her name, Dr. Patricia Halligan. And I think it was a good podcast. As you know me, I get chatty and overwinded. And
yeah, but this time around, it's like, roles reversed. And, for anybody who hasn't been listening to the podcast since episode one, where you kind of explain who you are and what's going on in your life, this is a quick way of finding, like, your interview. This is what you're all about, where you're coming from. So if you've just found us, in the past 15 episodes or so, this is a good way of getting up to speed on what's going on with this podcast.
So hers is called Recovery, The Hero's Journey, by Patricia Halligan, MD. And she's lovely. And she's done some other shows with people who talked about benzodiazepines. So you can, go through her podcast and look. And
you can find that the same place that you find our podcast.
And I believe you can go over to YouTube. I don't know if it's up yet on YouTube, but she said it would be. And we're also going to have her on our show.
Yeah.
So hers was talking to me about this end of, being somebody who is on them. So we'll get her asking questions from a doctor's point of view.
What kind of doctor is she?
She is a psychiatrist. Yeah,
okay.
So, and she's lovely, and I wish we could clone her because there should be more doctors like her. All right. Well, thank you, Garrett, because I know we can't do this without you. You do a great job, and I really appreciate it.